competitive, it just, you know, that can have a bit of an impact. So you just, I suppose, as someone who likes to kind of shy away from favourites, you just have to maybe work that a little bit harder this week to go and find a vulnerable favourite or two.
Well, let's step in and you know, appreciate it. Things start out with what is going to be close to an even money favorite in the Sky Bet Supreme Novice, getting things going. Kind of walk through tomorrow.
Yeah. So I think, like, the starting point in the Supreme Novice has all been about appreciated and trying to find holes in his form. Like, I think, you know, he ticks so many boxes. He's got Cheltenham form, been runner up in the bumper last year, Fernie Hollow, as a quite a strong favourite. He's done nothing wrong as a hurdler, won two group or grade ones. Last time out was probably not as impressive as the time beforehand, but he's done it quite easily on the front. Yeah, like, he's a very strong favourite, and I think the Irish have the strength and depth is that little bit deeper this year than the UK novices. So Meteor and Soaring Glory, well, you know, they've looked good, and Soaring Glory particularly looks like he's on a upward curve. I think Appreciate just has that form in the book, and he's a deserving favourite. I think, you know, and I probably wouldn't be hugely against him. I think the two, like, certainly the one that I had circled as an alternative to Appreciate is the number five horse, Grumpy Charlie, who, you know, comes in a little bit under the radar. Chris Honor wouldn't necessarily be the biggest household name, but is a very capable trainer. Won a decent, like, won a small handicap, but a kind of a decent yardstick in Eamon Kinnick last time out off a mark of 132, and he's gone up quite a bit. He's just, like, you know, I look at his form, and he's just an improver every race. And they're the type of horses you kind of want to have on your side for the Supreme Novice. And I think he's, you know, he's been nibbled at, you know, he's 28, 33 to 1, and he might represent a little bit of value away from the obvious horses that you may oppose Appreciate with.
Well, and I'm just looking on the market at the shops, and Grumpy Charlie's in the 30s. He's 30 to 1.
Yeah, no, and like, I think he a bit like Soaring Glory, he won a handicap off, like, Soaring Glory won off 133, and he's now rated 143, and Grumpy Charlie won off 132, he's now rated the same. So, like, I think they, you know, I know Soaring Glory won a better class handicap race and was quite impressive, but Grumpy Charlie, as I say, is just coming under the radar, and you get that extra, you know,
perfect.
You get a lot of extra points as a result.
Perfect. The Arkell is one of those short fields that Nick referenced, and Shishkin is going to be, I mean, 1-2. Don't know if there's anything much to be accomplished in the Arkell, but jump ahead to the Ultima, and this Group 3, this has got a nice size field. Might be room for a price or two in here.
Yeah, so just on the Arkell, yes, it's Shishkin looks like a very good bet. I'm probably going to go nearly kind of a strange way and probably have something very, very small on Eldorado Allen at a big price. He's already been beaten by Shishkin and Almondkind. I think when he ran against Almondkind, he probably wasn't. The Tizards are kind of in and out of form, and I think they're getting a little bit more into form. So I think he might be just to play. You know, I think if he runs a similar enough race, if he gets it within 10 lengths of Shishkin, that might be good enough for second. So that's maybe just a play against without the favourite or to come second, or, you know, if you can get a third place, that might be something to look at. I think, yeah, the Ultima is probably one of my favourite handicap chases of the week. It's just a really good quality chase. You know, it's probably for horses that are just that little bit below Gold Cup or Ryanair standard, but, you know, are, you know, very good sorts. I think, you know, looking at it, it's very, very wide open. My eye kind of gets drawn to Milan Native, who does runs for Denise Foster, who's taken over the Elliott Yard. Won very, very impressively at Cheltenham last year. And I think comes here £8 higher. Looks like, you know, he started off the season with a win over Disco Ram, who's a good yardstick. Things haven't really gone the right way since, but he's had a wind off, and I think, you know, I think like Cheltenham Festival is really a horses for courses type of strategy, and you know, you see a lot of trainers target year after year, and I think Milan Native just looks like he's one that's been kind of really primed for this, and I think I think with the wind off, and I think with the way the ground is as well, on kind of maybe a little bit softer than the good or good to soft that we thought it'll play to his strength. So I think he would be one that I have an eye on. I'm trying, like, I think that I think as well, maybe the one that, like, I suppose ran well for a long way last year, maybe just probably ran a little bit too free, was the Top Weight Cepage, kind of maybe at a bigger price. Say he, you know, probably would prefer this to be, ground wise it's probably okay. I think it was a bit softer last year, and I think he maybe won at a slightly bigger price, but Milan Native would probably be my number one going into the ultimate handicap.
Milan Native trading at about they're calling it 15-2, and the one that the longer shot that Kev just mentioned, Cepage, Cepage, who is 1, 2, 3, 4, is about ninth choice in the betting shops, 18-1 in the markets. Nice. Well, the Champion Hurdle and Honeysuckle, and in fact a couple of fillies in here, mares that are going to be drawing most of the attention, and of course Goshen. Nick pushed Goshen as an alternate, and I see Abracadabras is getting plenty of interest as well.
Yeah, I can't wait for this race. I think it's fascinating to me, and I think the race dynamics are going to be very interesting, because you have Goshen, who just likes to get on with things. You have Honeysuckle, who doesn't have to lead, but generally is forward. You've got Silver Streak, who improved so much at Kempton last time for a change of tactics to go forward. You've Aspire Tower, who likes to go forward. You have Not So Sleepy, who's a bit crazy but likes to go forward. So you've a lot of pace on in the race, and I think I'm leaning against anyone up near the pace, because I just think it'll be very, very fast. And like, I think Honeysuckle, this is going to be, I suppose, I think, I'm not saying this final moment, because I think she's proven herself as a top mare, and she's been a star so far. But I think this is our toughest test, and it's just a personal preference, but I'm not a huge fan of backing her off a lifetime top, which she was fantastic last time out, and I just think the dynamics are maybe against her this time. And I think the eye probably draws a bit on Epitant as maybe the light winner, but then I keep on circling Sharjah at maybe double figures, maybe 10-12-1, as a horse who is not far off criminally underrated, second in the race last year and beaten three lengths, but has looked really, really, has already, I think, won four group ones, has looked very good at Leopardstown over Christmas. Very disappointing last time out, but he did the same last year and came back. And with, I think this is Paul Tennant's first time on him in a couple of years, but I think just the way the race dynamics will how I foresee it, he could get a better toe into the race than maybe last year. Goshen's going to be fascinating. I think he's the one that, he could be a freak, and he could win by 10 lengths and just burn them all off like he did in the Triumph. But I say it's a big step up from the Triumph Hurdle to the Champion Hurdle. He did look very, very good last time out. Trying to figure out if that was a bit of a mirage or whether the real Goshen is back, because he had a few times. But Sharjah, I think, is the one I'm leaning on. And I think, as you mentioned, I think that the race dynamics are going to suit Abracadabra as well. He got to the front probably too early in the Supreme, and got chinned by Shishkin last year in the Supreme Novice, and we know how good Shishkin has turned out to be as a chaser. So, I think they both have proven course form, and I know that the mare's allowance is tough to overcome for Epitant, to beat Epitant or Honeysuckle, but I think I think they could do it.
Nice. Sharjah, Sharjah, 12-1 among the bookies, and gets us to Concertista in the day's last group one, the mare's hurdle. And is she worth going against?
Yeah, she's looked very, very good, and she's won, like, you know, she was second 2 years ago in the novice here. She won at Cheltenham last year. She won very easily, and her winters are usually not that impressive, and then she kind of comes alive at Cheltenham. But where she's actually been very, very impressive. This year she's beaten Manila Melody a couple of times and Black Tears and so on. She's very short, and I think Roxana is actually probably as good a mare as her. It's just maybe she would probably prefer it to be 3 miles rather than 2.5. Like, I think it's tricky enough. I think, like, you can probably point to a few each way, and it's maybe the way I'll go. And like, the two I've kind of looked at more closely. Firstly, Black Tears, who ran well last year in Cheltenham in the Coral Cup over 2.5 miles. Got beaten by Dame de Campagne, who's running against her tomorrow, but I think at the weight, Black Tears is a little bit better off. And also then as well, Great White Shark, actually, he won the Cesarewitch on the flat at Newmarket over 2.2 miles late last year in October. Actually won quite well as a well back favourite. Hurdles form is okay. We haven't seen her since a kind of a disappointing run over 3 miles in Goran, and as people know, being to Goran Park then in Kilkenny in Ireland, when it's heavy, it gets extremely heavy. So I can definitely forgive her that run. And she ran well in the Martin Pipe last year. She's got good course form, and I just think she's a Willie Mullins horse at double digit odds who could run a really, really good race.
Very nice. Black Tears right now about 14-1. Great White Shark about 16-1, and that's in the mare's hurdle. And Nick, explain to us what's going on with the National Hunt, which some of the appeal has been kind of tempered. But what about in the juvenile handicap? Here's a big, bulky field. Nick was interested in Busselton, who's third choice right now, about 9-10-1.
Yeah, this is the race, Steve. This is the type of race I love.
This is you.
I think you just have to spend a little time going through form lines, and I love seeing how horses finish off their races, how they've travelled in the races to see, because again, you're trying to project what they've done previously into kind of a, I know this is a handicap, but it's kind of a championship handicap environment, and can they jump well, and so on. It's an interesting one. I think no surprise, like Willie's horse, Willie Mullins' horse, San Sam, looks like he's the quality in the race, has been running in decent races in Ireland. The one that kind of draw, I suppose, two of maybe bigger prices, and I can actually see he's been well backed already, which is, I haven't got a price yet, so I'm maybe a little disappointed. But the number 20 horse, En Public, Oliver Greenall's horse, ran a couple of times in France, was beaten in neck by Gris, who's one of the favourites in the race, and then went to on its debut in Market Race, in kind of a fairly small track in the UK. Won very, very well, very impressive, and just finished off his race excellently. And I think he really drew the eye, and I think it would be, a double. I think he was 25-1 maybe on Sunday. The declarations came in, and he's one to have an eye on. I think as well, the other one probably for my pal Alan King, who's probably always done me a little bit of a favour, is the 16 horse Her Indoors. Again, who wasn't a superstar on the flat, was okay, but just feels like just has run all right, kept on improving as a hurdler. Took a little bit of time to get going at Doncaster last time out, but actually finished off her race well. And could be something that goes completely under the radar. But they'd be the two for me that I look again. They're maybe not. I think with this race, you always look at Joseph O'Brien, Paul Nicholls, and Willie Mullins because they are and Elias in the past, so Denise Foster, to have horses laid out for it. So, you know, that factored into the price. So if you can maybe find a horse outside of that stable who has a profile that you like, you can usually get a decent price.
Well, and for those that to get those two names, Homme Public, Public Man in French, and Homme, Homme, Public, 14-1, and Her Indoors is the second. Her Indoors, 25-1 in the market for Her Indoors, and 14-1 for Homme Public as options. This in the juvenile handicap hurdle from our man, the long shot lad, and you heard the magic words, Alan King. Because there hasn't been a Cheltenham the last 3-4 years people that were finding Alan King maybe for the first time keep coming back, and certainly Kev, yeah, you were out in front of Alan King before anybody.
I know, and I think at Royal Ascot, I think he just everything he touched kind of came first, second, or third at big prices, and I think we had a few fans on Scarlet Dragon. I think at 50-1 in with Alan King and Holly Doyle, who kind of sluiced through the field with a kind of a miraculous ride to get up on the line. So he's always done me a few favors.
Let's look at Wednesday, Kev, and hit a couple of spots, and certainly the big fields offer the best opportunity, and the first one that jumps out to me after the Ballymore Novice and the Brown Novice races that start the morning, for us anyway, the afternoon there, but the Coral Cup, the Group 3, has got a big, bulky field, and looks like this may be a place to reach for, you know, some unusual players.
Yeah, this is going to be a great, I think the ultimate handicap is probably my favourite handicap chase, but this is a great hurdle race, and like the timing of it, it hasn't really changed timing-wise. It's always been around the second day, and, you know, usually on course, me and the two pals usually throw two or three horses into an exacta and see if you can, you know, find a massive payoff, and it's just a great race, and it takes a good horse to win it. As well, if you look back through the previous winners, it's wide open, and it's hard enough to get a full angle on this. They've been trying my two that I've kind of latched on to so far. Firstly, Monte Cristo, Nicky Henderson's horse, who's kind of come in lightly raced over the last couple of years, but has a potentially has a touch of quality. Won extremely well on St. Stephen's Day in Kempton, just the day after Christmas. Went up £12 for it, but you know, just looks like looks like he could be a quality horse. There's a world of difference between Kempton and Cheltenham. So you know, you've got that slight negative, but I just think maybe he's a quality horse, and I like the angle coming in fresh. The other one would be kind of a nice little name, Sneaky Getaway, for not another Mullins, but Emmett Mullins, who, again, might need a little bit of money, because I think they're usually, when the money's down, usually things are all right, but he has to maybe overcome a poor run over hurdles over 3 miles, but, you know, he's looked decent. He's rated quite high on the flat, and he's rated nearly 96 on the flat, and there'll be some good hurdling form to his bow already, and you know, Emmett Mullins has already won a couple of handicap hurdles in Cheltenham earlier on this season in one of the previous meetings, and at a, you know, he's 25-1, he's worth a play. You know, again, if there was a bit more money, I'd maybe be a bit more confident on him, but I think they're the two I'm kind of leaning at. It's going to be like a great race, and I think, you know, there's a lot in contention here, and Willie Mullins has a couple in it, and it's just, you know, I would say if you do fancy one, and maybe a second or third string, you know, keep the faith, because I think, you know, with some of these races, trainers don't exactly know what their number one is, and the way the race goes, you kind of need a little bit of luck in running too.
Well, the Coral Cup goes as the third on Wednesday, and Monte Cristo about 14-1 right now in the bookies, and then Sneaky Getaway, who's up in the 30s, 35-1 as high as the Coral Cup, the Group 3. How about one more for Wednesday?
So the Grand Annual, I suppose, is the second-to-last race, again, two-miler. Again, it's kind of like the clash of the generation, so to speak, because you've kind of got a lot of the grizzled warriors coming back year after year, and then you've got some of the novices who are kind of maybe have the sexier profile and are kind of up and coming. And generally speaking, odds-wise, you know, leading the way in Bittered, Entikos, Sky Pirate, Zanza, I think they're all novices kind of coming into open company. And this two-miler, you need to just jump well. If you don't jump well, you haven't a hope. And I'd probably try to go against the grain as much as I can. And I'm happy enough taking two of the kind of old grand stagers for the Grand Annual. And kind of in that way, I'd kind of highlight Bundoran, the number six horse at a big price. He was third in the Champion Chase last year, beating 13 lengths off 160. He's dropped 10 pounds. His form hasn't been brilliant this year. He was a big price in a Grade One last time and pulled up. He ran out of the race, but he's a good Cheltenham horse, and I think he comes alive with a slightly better ground. I just think he has a chance of providing a big upset. And the other one I give is an even older. Bundoran's a 10-year-old. Tainval, the number 18 horse, is an 11-year-old for Nicky Henderson. It's the Johnny Henderson Grand Annual, so it's Nicky has a bigger incentive than most to win this race. Tainval, I think, is his only entry. Again, he ran well in the race last year, on a fifth, beaten eight lengths at a big price. Form hasn't been brilliant this year, but again, an 11-year-old, you can kind of think it takes a little bit of runs to get into form, and I think he's worth a bit of a punt at 40-1 or higher to make the frame. And I think, like, I know most of your audience is in the States, but I know with a lot of the bookies in UK and Ireland, they'll offer with a kind of a 20 runner race of 4, 5, 6 places, and he's a good jumper, and he can provide six, and same with Bundoran. I take the two of them as a chance to upset the young brigade.
Well, Bundoran, Bundoran, 28-1 right now in the shops, and then Thinval, Theinval, 40-1, and this is why Kev Humphreys, who you should be following on Twitter, Kev Hum, KevHum, the long shot lad, and we may have to swing into action. I'll talk to our web guy. We might be able to have we do own longshotlad.com, so we will make sure that Kev's picks, and his full list of plays, he'll put them up tomorrow morning, and I'll make sure to retweet them, and in fact probably he'll copy and put them up at our website as well. So here's the first 2 days of Cheltenham. Kev Humphreys, Kev, I appreciate this, and we'll check back in Wednesday. We'll probably listen to a race, maybe to the Coral Cup, where we're looking for Monte Cristo and Sneaky Getaway, and then we'll look at the Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, perfect, Steve. Always happy to help, always happy to chat, and if people do follow me on Twitter, they'll see a lot of my horses come last, second last, and sometimes when there's, I think, two, they come last and second last. But I think, it's a long game here, and I think if you get the odd winners, that more than compensates, and that's the beauty of it. So, look, fingers crossed we get a winner or two or some good enjoyment out of the selections, and we'll see if we can kind of repeat our successes at Royal Ascot this year in Cheltenham.
Well, past results are not guarantees of future, but Kev's got about as good a track record at finding just, you know, crazy prices. And for those of us that, it's already difficult enough to convince observers about chasing anyway. And when it comes to then, you know, Cheltenham, you know, which is the biggest meet of its kind in the world, the four biggest days worldwide for steeplechase and hurdling. It's a very special 4 days, and we'll look to hit one or two here over the week. Kev, I appreciate it. We'll talk on Wednesday.
Thanks, Steve.
Kev Humphries, everybody. Kev Hum, K-E-V-H-U-M. And, you know, Kev, you know, he'll give you Hong Kong. He'll give you some Dubai action, you name it. Rich Migliori is standing by after another weekend of America's Day at the Races on Fox. Richie, good morning.
How are you, Steve? How's everything?
I'm good. Everyone is waiting eagerly, Rich, with one of the biggest decisions that anybody has considered in recent weeks and months. What's up with the frozen duck?
Actually, you know what? I left it in the freezer because it's just me and Luciano home right now, and he's not into the duck, so... I'm going to wait to make that. That's so fun. Yeah.
The other day, Rich reached out to Twitter and said, you know, I got a duck in the freezer, and should I thaw it? And I could cook it Monday or Tuesday or maybe Sunday night, but I might be too tired coming home from the weekend. And we all, the orange.
Yeah, I tell you what, I was too tired last night. I got back here, I was dead. I was like, oh, man, I guess. What was I thinking? But the more I thought about it, Luke's just not into duck, so you'll have to wait. Carmel will be back from Ocala tomorrow night. She's been down there with Joe, helping him look at horses and, imparting some of her expertise that, a lot of people don't know. My wife's an extremely accomplished, horsewoman. Was assistant trainer to Steve DeMauro for a number of years, and then assistant trainer to Bobby Reinecker when he had Green Tree, and actually had the second division of Green Tree's horses at Belmont one winter. And a very good friend of ours, Loretta Lustig, is assistant trainer to John Kimmel.
Sure.
Was actually training. She was training a few on her own. Had a horse called, I believe it was Windchill. And I won on Windchill, but I hadn't won a race for Carmella yet. And as good a friend as you, I could tell it was bugging her. And then a couple days later, I won on a horse named Jimmy Creed for Carmella. And I'm going to tell you, Steve, from like post 11 on the inner track going two turns, I was on the rail like fifth or sixth into the first turn, got through, was in front at the eighth pole. Ruben Hernandez, who I think is one of the strongest riders I've ever ridden with, gets a neck on me with the 16th pole, went left-handed and came back and won by a nose. And I remember Harvey Pack saying on his recap show that I think I won like four that day. He was like, Mig rode this horse like his wife said, you're going to be sleeping on the couch if this horse doesn't win.
And did you tell him that was the case?
Couch. I might have been out in the doghouse. Come on.
That's hysterical. By the way, it's so funny that Ruben Hernandez's name comes up, because somebody wrote, I can't remember if they wrote me an email or if it was on Facebook or Twitter, but somebody asked about Ruben Hernandez over the last like 72 hours.
I saw him at Gulfstream maybe 2 years ago, and he looked great. I mean, he looked fit. Couldn't have looked better. I know he lives, down there in South Florida. I honestly don't know what he's doing. I would love to talk to Ruben, though. A guy that I had so much, still have so much respect for. And, you think about some of the big races he won, Belmont Stakes, Marlboro Cup, big races. He was a tremendous rider, just a terrific rider. And I just said Jimmy Creed. The horse name was Jimmy Symington. I'm thinking of the stallion Jimmy Creed now.
Sure, exactly. I wasn't gonna address it, but I figured I didn't hear you clearly. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's, you know, I'm looking at horses on the computer. Then Joey and Carmella are sending me short lists, and I'm looking at Breeze videos, and then giving my input. I actually really like the Jimmy Creed that worked down there at TLBS. So I got so many horses in my head.
Well, you know, I'm glad you knew at least, you know, within the last 2 years what Ruben, you know, that he's down there. And, you know, somebody first they said, you know, Dinobi's alive, and what, you know, where is he? What is he doing? So I appreciate it. And you're right about, you know, it's funny from his era, you know, from the 70s, 80s, essentially, his name should come up more than it does.
Oh, absolutely, and he rode for some of the big outfits. I mean, Mr. Maloney, he rode him on a lot of his horses with Christiana and his other owners. David Whiteley, he was one of David Whiteley's go-to guys. Obviously, you know, Coastal, but I remember, I think he won with Heckazato for the Chief, Noble Nashua. I mean, honestly, as strong a rider, just a tremendous competitor. I told you the story. He you know, ran into me coming back after I won a race because I squeezed him, and, you know, kind of a guy, no nonsense. Hey, straighten up, fly right, you know, and, you respect guys like that. That's, you know, how you learn.
Exactly. Well, we're going to revisit because that's one of those kinds of names that I like to come back to and showcase. You also said something about you know, coming over and gaining an upper hand. Let's talk about one race before any other, and I referenced it before Kev just joined us to give us a look at the first couple of days of Cheltenham. The result in the Rebel, Rich, and I thought Joel Rosario's ride really made a difference. He got very aggressive, and he seemed to intimidate Florent Giroux on Caddo River.
You know, you need to watch the head on out of the gate, and not that it was glaring or anything, but Caddo River took a little bit of a hop and a step to the inside, step to his left. Now, it wasn't a lot, but as well as Concertor broke and as deliberate as Joel Rosario was, that little hiccup. I mean, and that's
enough.
All it was.
Yep.
I think so. I think he just got the drop on him. You know, because I was kind of the same mind as you think, well, he kind of, you know, he wasn't decisive enough, and Joel made up his mind for him. But when I watched the head on, that's the impression I came away with. You may disagree, but that's how I saw it. You know, earlier in the day, kind of the same thing happened, but the opposite, where Florent got the drop on Joel. He rode the, you know, She Dares the Devil with Latruska. And Latruska kind of didn't break as cleanly as she generally does, and he just, you know, got the drop on him. But I thought it was kind of funny. It was the two same riders and you know, just flip-flopped the scenario.
No, I'd like that, and you know, in terms of the race, I don't know if I was being unfair, not dismissive, but you know, there was attempts at least during the week leading up to Saturday to make this race to put it on the same kind of level as last week's San Felipe, you know, with, you know, a showcase potentially of four, you know, really serious five even derby types. And obviously Life is Good was just, you know, overwhelmed that field. But this seemed, I don't know, I kind of thought this ended up being a little underwhelming, you know, after they galloped out.
I think that's a fair assessment. I was very impressed with Concertor, just his professionalism. He's a good-sized horse. For a horse, you know, like him to be able to
bounce out of the gate and, you know, seize the race, establish the lead the way he did, and then idle, then switch off. I was impressed with that. I liked the way he did it, straight as a string. Now, you know, I know some people think I'm being maybe a little hard on Life is Good. I have nothing but superlatives about his ability. I'm still bugged by the drifting out and getting out. And
sure.
Listen, he may come back in the, you know, Santa Anita Derby, or I'm assuming that's where he's going to run, and they'll have gotten it squared away, and it's not an issue. But I think it's something that you have to think about, you have to talk about, because he was really, you know, drifting. And I said it, I believe I said it last week on your show, you know, I understand the reasoning. They say, well, the tote board, he looks at the board. But if I keep going back to the gallop out and watching how he ran to the outside fence after, you know, after the wire, when there is no, you know, board to look at. And it just makes me question if there's not a little more to it. That I guess that's the best way to put it.
Well, and that one will, you know, we'll certainly keep an eye on his works leading up toward Santa Anita Derby time. This group, you know, Baffert wins, his eighth. And, you know, it's interesting, Rich, because I had made a handicapping note in my write-up. One of the things that I thought was pretty amazing going into this race, and I'm going to go back to what I wrote for those that didn't see it. He'd won 7 of the last 12. But between Cupid and Nadal in 2016 and 2020, he had American Anthem get beat at 3-2. Solomini got beat. Malagasy, an American Anthem, you know, was well down. But Solomini was second at 6-5 to Magnum Moon. Improbable was second at 2-5 to Long Range Toddy. And game winner, of course, that was Omaha Beach beat game winner. In the Rebel.
Right.
So there were four other horses that in between Cupid and Nadal, you know, three of which, you know, under normal, you know, normal result, Baffert-wise, could have won this race. I thought it was interesting because Concert Tour kind of came to this race very different than the other Rebel participants that Baffert has sent. You know, here's a horse with, you know, the two starts, and, you know, Nadal is the closest parallel to him. You know, those other ones I mentioned were horses that, you know, had real two-year-old form. And, you know, here's another one of these horses that got something of a late start. And, you know, I'm happy for Gary and Mary West. They sold. It's pretty funny. They bred and sold Life is Good. And yet it looks like they're going to elbow their way into the Derby with this horse.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. You go back and Constantor had the two sprints, right? And his last race going 7 furlongs was workmanlike. He beat Freedom Fighter, who came to New York and didn't run very well. But you could attribute that to a lot of things, different kind of surface, deeper surface, shipping. You know, some people were talking before the Rebel saying, well, Freedom Fighter, he had to work so hard to beat him, and look how bad he ran in the Gotham. But I could put a line through that. I go back to this, Steve. There's one thing that all good horses have in common, and they possess speed. You know, we've seen over the years, you know, I remember Crypto Clearance breaking his maiden in Saratoga, you know, wire to wire, going 3/4 in like 10. And he became a deep closer. It's how they learn to dole out that speed, how they meet it out. And I think he won those sprints, Concertor, just because he's that talented. I think you saw what he really wants to do is get in that big rhythm of his. And the efficiency of his stride was very impressive to me. I know, you know, people say, well, he got everything his own way, but the consummate ease in which he won and the fact that he's so efficient. What American Pharoah, his strength to me, and, you know, people would knock him saying, well, he's always getting an easy trip. Well, because he's just so efficient.
Yeah.
He gallops there. He takes himself there. He creates that trip. So, and again, I'm not trying to say this horse is American Pharoah, but I think it was eerily reminiscent in the efficiency of their stride, their mechanics.
Now, and kind of one of those horses that clips along, and you know, it's got balance, and and in Rosario's hands, that's it's a dangerous proposition, and certainly from a split standpoint, ran nice. This was a, you know, a step forward. I mean, to stretch out and you know, come away with that kind of a win. Well, we'll see how everybody regroups out of the race too. I made the point, Rich, that Big Lake, the Asmussen, was a little more than a little unlucky, frankly. Would have been second had Caddo River not essentially stopped in his face.
Yeah, it also affected the Peter Miller horse that had won the American Farrell last fall.
Get her number.
It affected that horse drastically as well. Those two. That horse was in the midst of a rally. I think he was going to hit the board as well. But yeah, they got broadsided. They got hip checked, and it just completely shut them down. You know, people underestimate body contact and how much air it takes out of a horse. I remember I used to ride a really fast horse for Billy Turner, Pock to Pock, good sprinter. And he was prepping for, I think, the Rose Ben or the Bull Ruler in an allowance race. And he's supposed to win easy. And some horse ducked out and bumped me at the break. And he wound up winning, but it was life and death to win on a field that he really was head and shoulders above. And I kind of was disappointed, like, you know, thinking, well, I don't know about our chances and whatever the stake was that was coming up. And then he broke cleanly that day, and he just swamped a much better field. And I went, you know, I underestimated how much air it took out of him. You know, you think you're running, you get punched in the stomach like that, and it just all the air comes out. You know, it really opened my eyes to how it can affect a horse, or, you know, in different situations or different horses differently. So, you know, and we talk about the Derby every year, how rough it can be the first turn, although it's been a lot cleaner since they revamped the point system, where you're not getting these, you know, sprinters that have no chance to get a mile and a quarter as much as you used to. And you have that log jam. But, you know, I think a lot of horses, you know, go back, Native Dancer got bumped on the first turn, and it, you know, the only race he ever lost was the Kentucky Derby.
Well, and was chasing, you know, a, you know, fairly hopeless type. That'll hurt you too. Well, we'll see where everybody moves out of this, because you know, Diodoro obviously disappointed with the way Keep Me in Mind came back. I mean, he might be rethinking, you know, the decisions that, you know, scratching out of the Risen Star and all that. We'll see if he can't, you know, pull things together. You know, the other ones I think will go, you know, will go forward. You could tell that Brad Cox was frustrated and a little crestfallen, and certainly for, you know, for John Ed Anthony, you know, for Caddo River coming in, you know, as, you know, as the heavy favorite, that surprised me, actually, that he was such a clear favorite over a Concert Tour.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that as well. You know, but I guess, you know, also Brad Cox is just, everything he puts on the racetrack, he's been running, you know, lights out. And I think also probably being a local favorite, you know, because of the John Ed Anthony factor. Yeah. You know, I got a kick out of, like, the Temperance Hill, you know, being run on the undercard. And my first summer in Saratoga, Temperance Hill won the Travers that summer. And, you know, even as a kid, because you give the bouncers at the, what was the name of the place on the lake? The Rafters.
Rafters.
Yeah, you would give them, you know, a winner, and they would, you know, even though I was too young to get in, they would let me in because, you know, I gave them a winner, right? And I remember they had a big party. Eddie Maple was there. You know, like, you know, when you're a kid, that's a big deal. Like, wow, Eddie Maple's in there. Like, you know, because they had won the Travers, and they, like, took a private area in the Rafters. And, you know, then Temperance Hill, obviously, his Belmont Stakes, mile and a half. So the race at Oaklawn, a mile and a half. I just, you know, it kind of made me reminisce. It brought me down that, because that year, Joe Canny and Eddie Maple with the Loblolly at the time, now it's Shortleaf, John Ed Anthony, they were formidable.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, then was away from the game for a fairly extended period and has come back in a big way. And certainly, you know, certainly like to see, you know, John Ed Anthony back at the highest level. You know, you mentioned Cox. We should slip in. I brought up Envutante earlier with Kenny McPeak, fourth behind Cheaters the Devil, who came back running. Nice return for her as a four-year-old debut. Latruska ran very well following up her Houston Ladies Classic performance. And then we should slip in as well the group of races that made up the cross country, Rich, that you guys had on the show. And Silver State, I think, kind of made a little bit of a case for himself among the older horses. That was that win in the Essex, that may be a little signal that that he's ready to, you know, join, you know, the upper echelon.
Oh, absolutely. I thought that was, you know, his consistency, the way he's been doing it. I thought he was very impressive. You see that, though, consistently, don't you? Like Steve Asmussen will get a horse in a form, a rhythm, and they are able to maintain it. You know, like what he did with Gunrunner, you know, that when once that horse, you know, reached his maturity and how he was able to hold his form over all that time. So it's kind of a benchmark of what Steve does. Yeah, just as we were talking, and this is a little bit off topic, I was in Camden, not last winter, the winter before, with Kip Elzer, who, by the way, has got a really nice violence in the OBS sale. Watch that horse's work, Kirkwood Stable Consignment. And he and I walked into a restaurant in Camden, and who was sitting there but Joe Canty? And we walked in, and so it just jumped in my head. I had to get that out, but...
Well, and I'm glad you brought... It's funny, you brought up... You brought up Kip. I'm not going to have time, certainly today, to get to him. But that violence is hip number 48, and was one of the, you know, one of several that went in 9-4. He ended up. He's got four in the sale, and very frequently Kip is the guy I reach out to you know, for updates and things. And when we get to, I'm sure, for the Gulfstream sale, you know, he's got those groups of horses that he's doing differently with the gallop style, as opposed to drilling the horses. But these are four that he's going to sell the next 2 days. He's got a Lord Nelson colt that happens to be New York bred that sells early tomorrow, went in 10-2. And then there's the Violence colt. Then he's got an Empire Maker, a Blame, and he took the honor code that he had out. So four colts for Kirkwood. And
you know, he doesn't crank them up to do that either.
No.
I mean, you know, I spent 4 days with him down there and, you know, out training with him in the morning. And I mean, it's so sedate and tranquil in Camden, and he really takes his time, and he long walks and through the woods. And I mean, he does a phenomenal job. I think he's just a terrific guy. I had so much fun down there, and the sense of history in Camden, you know, going to see Mickey Prager Jr., and then his dad coming out, because I used to ride a lot for Mickey Sr., and just terrific people, terrific horse people. And there's Frank Whiteley's old barn, and Ruffian was in that stall, and Forgo was in that stall. And, you know, it's just a very enchanting place if you love our game and love the horses and just kind of wander around there and feel that sense of history.
Back to for a minute to the cross country, because I do want to let people know about what was a terrific score for a player. And of course, the cross country, it's got the low takeout, the 15%, but the key to it is that it's strictly for retail players. There's no wholesale, no group action. And a player for $240 put together this ticket to be the only winner on Saturday in the cross country, $108,000. Took down the whole pool, 3x5x8x1x4. And so he went three deep in the first leg, Silver State. And, you know, chances are, you know, probably Silver State and Harper's First Ride, I would guess, and maybe Night Ops, right? the second leg, you did have a modest upset, and he went five deep, and that was smart. I went three deep, and Mijos ends up running down Secret Rules at 6-1 for Jimmy Jerkins and Centennial. So Mijos pays 14.40 in that second leg. The third leg was the allowance that looked really inscrutable. And as it happens, this we'll talk tomorrow with Papo, and we'll do some recapping of the form to win plays. Special Reserve stood out in a couple of different places. He stood out on Thurgraph, and he stood out on form to win. 8-1. And this guy, this player, went eight deep in here. Special Reserve, who I keyed off of as well as Papo, wins the race and pays 18.20. The player, Rich, singled Sadie Lady in the correction. And that was a very clever angle. I mean, Sadie Lady was certainly one of the ones that could win, but to single there was pretty daring, and she pays 13 for Rob Attriss. And then came the Temperance Hill, and he found Carlos L. And the horse should never have been 47-1, but still, he was not the easiest horse. If you're building a ticket, and depending on your budget, this guy went four deep. And, you know, for me, I went two deep. I used Lone Rock and I used Treasure Trove. And I thought Lone Rock was going to go right on by. And Alex Canchari, congratulations to him and to Mac Robertson and to the Good Friends people. Tomorrow we'll get Renee Douglas on, the Good Friends team. This horse would not let Lone Rock. I mean, Lone Rock was out, was getting out a little bit. But still, Canchari did some job to hold this horse together. 97.40 to win the Temperance Hill and $108,000 to this one player.
Wow, that's some score. That's very cool. I guarantee you that Renee knows Ruben. I'm sure that he and Ruben are friends. You should ask him about Ruben. He'd be a good guest to talk to Ruben about that era.
All right. I'm glad this came up because it's funny. I talked to Renee about a month ago. He's got the book for Angel Arroyo, and Angel was seemingly on his way to a nice winter, and he got hurt at just the worst time. And then got back going, and so Renee and I were talking because Angel's going to ride our Claude Ray down in Florida, I'll get Renee on. Yeah,
you're Gary with that Claude Ray. Come on,
the Jockey Club made me get permission from Shug.
That is hysterical. Only Gary though comes up with Claude Ray, right?
It's not just that he calls him Claude Ray. It's the way he calls him Claude Ray. How you feeling this morning, Claude Ray?
You're such a job buster. Oh my God.
Well, and I'm getting more information as we speak about the $108,000 winner, and it came. It was a two-person ticket. 120 each they put up, and they take down 108,000. So two guys in New Orleans. It's going to be a fun Louisiana Derby week, and I'll see if I can't get because they knew at Naira how it got hit. They didn't have a lot of the other specifics. So I'll see if we can't. We'll see how publicity interested the parties might be. Rich, let's get to the sprint two in here and get CZ Rocket, who manages to just get past Whitmore. Whitmore was looking for his fifth straight Hot Springs.
Well, we talked about Joel and Florent kind of flip-flopping their trips in between the Aziri and the Rebel. This was kind of like a flip-flop of the Breeders' Cup sprint, right, where CZ Rocket was in front of Whitmore, and Whitmore wound up winning. This time, Whitmore was made kind of the first run, and you could see Florent just had the radar locked on Whitmore, and he was right in his tail. Whatever he was going to do, he was following him, and he was able to gun him down. And, you know, Ron Marquette had said that about that he had missed some training with Whitmore because of the snow and the inclement weather down there. And I was thinking, well, you know, a horse, older horse, like, has so much foundation, so many miles in, it probably won't be that big a deal. Maybe that's what showed up, but it seems like this could be an interesting budding rivalry. And I hope we get to see these guys square off a couple more times, because I don't think there's a lot that separates them other than Tripp.
And, well, they'll certainly, you would think, they'll come back together for the Count Fleet on Arkansas Derby Day. And, of course, if you know, Kenny McPeak wasn't committing, Rich, and we can maybe fold in some of the other results and also some performances back in New York over the weekend. But if all the top fillies and mares want to have an early season throwdown, that apple blossom could be terrific.
How about that division? How deep is the Philly
there?
You know,
it's crazy.
It's fantastic. It's a great trend that we're seeing that these mares are sticking around. You know, they're not hustling them off to be bred as much, and it's just good for us as fans. Like, we're at the end of the day, we love the game because of the opportunity to see these kind of horses. And you know, obviously having Monomoy Girl back now at six, and you know, these three-year-old fillies that turned four, Swiss Skydiver, She Dares the Devil. I mean, we're really lucky that these owners are keeping them campaigning, and seemingly they've all taken a step forward too. I thought, believe it or not, Swiss Skydiver looked bigger and stronger to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she really made that next step from three to four.
That's exactly what I said. I said to McPeak earlier, I said, how has she changed since November? And he said, she's just bigger and stronger.
Yeah, it looked evident to me. Even watching her in the post parade, I was like, damn. I mean, and she's always been to me, you know, a solid individual. Like not that she was so robust, but that balance and solid all the way through. And I looked at her in the post parade, man, she looks more like a colt now. I mean, she really, and you know, like, it's good for Robbie Alvarado. Here he's at a stage of his career. He's not getting the cream of the crop, but, you know, gets this mare, and you could just see the confidence, you know, that he has in her, and just the way she travels into his hands. Like, and listen, he's ridden great horses over the years. It has to be really, really special at this point when, you know, you almost take it for granted when you're younger and you get horses like Mineshaft and, you know, different good horses, Curlin and this and that. But, you know, now at this stage when it's, you know, far and few in between, and he knows how to get it done, obviously, especially when you get a horse that jumps up and underneath you like that.
Well, we'll wait and see. Kenny talked about the La Trienne as a possibility, or the Apple Blossom, and you know, some of that'll we'll decide on. I'm sure he'll, you know, he'll decide on how she comes out of this race. He said Royal Ascot was knocking on the door, and she's got plenty of breeding for potential, you know, potentially for some grass action too. So and
one thing about Kenny, he won't shy away from a challenge.
No.
Really? No, not at all.
No, he likes pushing those envelopes. A couple of other spots too, Rich. I want to slip in here too. There were a couple of maiden winners. I've already referenced Triple Tap, the American Pharoah sibling for Jane Lyon, and got to slip in since we mentioned Shug, the Code of Honor sibling. Bears Watching. A Caracanti winner on Saturday at Gulfstream, 7 furlongs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's too, like what we were saying earlier about horses, that Code of Honor, who wound up becoming more of a closer, he broke his maiden in Saratoga wire to wire. Right? So if I'm remembering correctly, am I remembering correctly?
Oh, I can't. I got to look. Let's see. Let's find out.
Yeah, I'm almost certain of that. But, yeah, no, listen, I'm a big fan of Greatest Honor, too, by the way. And who better than Shug McGee to get a horse like that, you know, there, you know?
Oh, no doubt. And with that that continues, preparations continue toward the Florida Derby, which, we got 2 weeks, 2 weeks away. Boy, things are starting to fly, frankly. Pages off the
That's what happens as we get older. The time goes faster.
Exactly. Exactly right. All right, here we go. Here's your code of honor answer. Let's scroll down. Absolutely. Look at you, Saratoga, first asking, winner actually.
You know the only reason I remember that? Because I bet on him. Okay, so
there you go.
And
that'll do.
Yeah, I was doing the work analysis for XBTV at that time, and you know, we had his works on tape, and I was like, "Oh, this horse, he's going to win first time," and he did. That's why I remember. I'm not going to put hearts and flowers on me.
you know what's crazy about this? This is very funny. I'm just looking down at that chart. Code of Honor was a nice price. Was paid $15. Was six, 15-2, and Clayton the Lionheart, who raced over the weekend, debuted in that race.
Wow, that's funny, huh?
How about that? Well, he just got beat, I think, right? That might have been the nightcap in that starter allowance. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yes, yeah.
I'm almost positive that I know I saw him over the weekend. I mean, he's only
I did too. I definitely saw him over the weekend as well. But it is funny, like the things that stand out to you, right? I mean, even going back, Swell, you know, so much speed as a 2-year-old, and even though he was always a horse that laid up close, but he could stretch it out, obviously, all the way to a mile and a half.
Now, Rich, I gotta wind it down, and I was hoping I don't think it's gonna work, but I was hoping to catch Joe down in Ocala, and I was gonna slip him in and give him a little push for the new bloodstock business, but he's obviously rifling through the barns right now.
Yeah, I tell you what, they hit it pretty good. Carmella's coming back tomorrow night. She's up in Palm Beach now visiting with Gabrielle, who's there, you know, working with show horses, and then she's staying with her tonight and then going to get on a flight tomorrow. I got to pick her up, and they hit it pretty good. I mean, they you know, yesterday morning they were at the sales grounds very early, and they're ahead of it. They're really on top of it, and Joe's got some people that are supporting them, so it's good, and, I'm excited. I'm glad that Carmella and Joe had that opportunity to do that together a little bit. Like, I think growing up, you know, obviously we always talk horses in this house. It's just, you know, dinner table conversation. And, you know, I was the most visible part of this because I was out there riding, and, you know, riders get more notoriety anyway. And I don't know that Joey fully comprehended just how accomplished a horsewoman, you know, Carmella's been her whole life. And then, you know, to have this experience with her, and you know, he's getting married in June. So I kind of like the way it all worked out.
Oh, no doubt. And in fact, Casey, call that number if you would, okay? Because as it happens, Joe just texted me back. Okay, hold on. I'm texting him at the same time. I'll say. Casey calling now. As we wait for Joe to join us, you do have try him again, Case. The Ocala's funny too. I mean, the service think is.
Well, if he's anything like his father, he's 50-50 to pick up.
he said I can come on now if possible, and I said absolutely. But Carmella went down to see Gabrielle, right? She down to Wellington.
Yeah, so she went to Wellington this morning, and then she's going to be flying back tomorrow into Westchester, which is good because it's only 50 miles
easy.
From the house instead of 100 to Kennedy.
Is that restaurant still open at Westchester?
I'm sorry, Steve, where?
That restaurant that overlooks the tarmac, there's a fabulous restaurant for years at Westchester Airport.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Let me tell you, because I used to fly Piedmont out of there. And,
okay.
I mean, back, you know, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. And I'll tell you, the land of fast horses and dinosaurs. the place was, it was called, I want to say Windows, was it not Windows or something?
Yeah, I've only flown in and out of there a few times, but
it
just worked out good for tomorrow.
Tremendous. When I lived in White Plains, and I lived in the Crown Plaza in White Plains for a year.
Where did you live?
Well, Aaron, you go to is laughing and saying that right now. The 2,000-year-old man. Joe Migliori standing by at OBS, his first sale opportunity out on his own. Joseph Migliori, Bloodstock. Joe, good morning, and you're on with retired rider Rich Migliori.
Yeah, I heard a familiar voice when I first connected through here, but thanks for having me on, Steve, and good to be on.
Joe, talk about this undertaking that you're working for West Point, and you had so many options, after the Flying Start program and all the experiences you were getting, and you really had your choice of avenues in this industry.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was able to go to the Irish National Stud Course and then, do some time in Australia, and that was, obviously a great kind of international bit of experience and really kind of gave me a good grounding in the bloodstock world and also, the breeding side of our industry. Growing up on the racetrack, I don't think, had as much exposure to, what it takes to breed a horse that's going to get to the track. It kind of started at the track and always going to have love for the track, but there was definitely an appeal and a draw to the sales and to, stud farms and the breeding industry as a whole.
In terms of picking the time to go out on your own, give us, the decision-making process.
Look, I loved my time at West Point. I thought it was a tremendous experience, someone that I learned so much from. But I had been there about 6 years and, was getting to a point where I felt like I could do a decent amount of work, on my own and had, several owners kind of asking me, when that would happen or if and when it does happen, give me a call and let me know. And it just felt like it was time. It felt like I had enough support behind me. I just turned 30 years old and always kind of, had it in the back of my head that would be maybe the time to start considering a move like that. And excited to be down here in Ocala now. Been, was down here for about 10 days and then zipped home real quick and came right back, for the Breeze show. So been in Ocala quite a bit, through the month, the end of February into the month of March. And excited to get this sale going. I as soon as we hop off here, probably going to sit down and make up a final kind of vetting list, and hopefully you'll see my name on a ticket or two, here at the sale.
Joe Migliori with us, who has started Migliori Bloodstock, and Joe, in terms of attracting a client base, talk about how you approach that, and for those that are considering any kind of enterprise, whether it's as a trainer or the other areas of bloodstock advice, breeding advice, where are you finding clients, and what are your suggestions for people as they, consider this kind of a gambit?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for me, I want to try to be, a vessel for people that to get into the industry. And look, it can be, hard to find, people that, that love our sport so much that, they want to step over the line to ownership. But, I think just spending the amount of time that I've spent around, the New York Racing Association tracks that, has kind of, I've been exposed to a lot of, owners and partnerships who have aspirations to, do things on their own potentially one day, or maybe do things in like a partnership with less people in it, not in, the standard, 10 plus, 15 plus people in a partnership, some people that want to get together with friends and, maybe just have two or three owners on a horse. So look, having that exposure to people, I think my, goal, is that if, I don't want to tell them what kind of experience they should have. I kind of want them to tell me and then, me be the vessel to get them to, accomplish the things they want to do in the industry or as an owner, or the things they want to experience, because, everybody's got, different views of of how they want to play the game.
What, in terms of the services that you know that you're going to provide, lay out what's available to people that want to reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you know, all bloodstock work at the sales, and you know, helping them find a horse at all budgets. You know, everybody's going to have a different kind of budget. You know, being able to go to the sale with any kind of budget and find a horse that, you know, can be competitive. You know, obviously with smaller budgets, you have to be a little bit more forgiving of certain things or you know, more, you know, willing to accept certain things. And you know, obviously once, you know, purchase that horse, you know, the entire experience in terms of, you know, communication, you know, with the trainer, you know, kind of acting as a medium between the two. And, you know, anytime it's time to come out of the races, making sure that everybody's fully accommodated and going to have a good time.
Outstanding. And Richie should give you a chance to dote on Joe. What will clients find? What's Joe's most endearing attribute?
Well, I just think how thorough Joseph is and his attention to detail. You know, he's been around this game his whole life. You know, we've got pictures of him in the paddock just studying horses when he was like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. And the fact that he took it upon himself to, you know, go to the Irish National Stud, go on to Australia, get more of an international education. And then the time he spent, you know, with Terry, with West Point, continuing, furthering that education. So, you know, I have a lot of confidence in Joseph's expertise, but I admire his work ethic. And I think that's a formidable combination, if you will.
Joe Migliori with us. You can follow Joe as Mig Bloodstock these days now and on Twitter and at OBS when you see him. Introduce yourself if you've never met him. He certainly is, certainly has been around enough, and probably most, you know, certainly the you know, consigners and trainers know Joe. But if you're on the grounds, and don't be shy about meeting Joe. Joe, what qualities did you get from Mel, and which qualities from Rich?
Well, I think I've learned a lot, you know, from the both of them. And, you know, I think obviously, you know, maybe an obvious answer, but, you know, Dad's perspective, a little bit more, you know, as a rider and, you know, the body language of riders and you know, what a horse does with a rider on their back, you know, all the little, you know, minute details that a lot of people, you know, it takes them a lot of time to develop any understanding of that. I think obviously, you know, his career and, you know, being able to speak with him every night about, you know, the races he rode that day, you know, gave me the ability to watch a race at a very high level very quickly, you know, and you know, watch, you know, a horse's body language with, like I said, with a rider on their back. And whereas Mom, a little bit more with the horse, you know, on the end of a shank and without, you know, a rider on their back. And, you know, Mom maybe a little bit more sometimes, you know, on the you know, confirmational side or the, you know, some of the, you know, the way a horse is walking, a way that, you know, or a horse's feet, things like that. You know, that was a little bit more, you know, the side of the coin that you know, I can contribute to Mom, you know. Whereas Dad, like I said, very much from a rider's perspective.
Well, certainly the Migliori family and just synonymous for New York and the trade and the game. And Joe now off making his own way, and Migliori Bloodstock. Good luck the next couple of days, Joe. We'll be watching. We'll be watching for your name on a couple of lines.
Absolutely, Stephen. Thanks so much for having me on.
Not at all. And Rich, I wanted to make it a little bit more of a surprise, but close enough.
No, I appreciate you having Joe on too, and you know, you're always excited for your children when they're, you know, spreading their wings, if you will, and reaching for, you know, different goals. And it, you know, it's nice that it's a shared passion. You know, it's like I said, our whole family life has revolved around, you know, horses and you know, racing, and you know, unfortunately, probably at times too much my career, although I'll quickly tell you a funny story. Carmelo and I flew out to the Breeders' Cup. I won with Desert Code. We flew back on the red eye, and Joey was running cross country that day in the States. And so I had already planned on not riding that day because I didn't want to miss that. You know, it was a big deal. So we get back on the red eye like 5:30 in the morning. We go to the house. Joey had already left with the team on the bus. We wake the young ones up. Philip, Luciano, Gabrielle, we go out, watch Joey run. He ran great. I think he was third in the States. And had a great family day. On Monday, Philip goes to school. He comes home. He says, "Hey, Dad, my science teacher told me you won a big race Saturday." But you know what? That was always to me the beauty of Philip. He didn't care about that. He was like, "Hey, you're Dad. Let's go have a catch." You know?
I love it. Wow, excited for Joe and this undertaking, and Rich, I appreciate we kind of scattershotted around the weekend, and we barely even hit some of the New York results, and we'll do it with Andy tomorrow, I guess, and we'll look forward to another big weekend. We got the Louisiana Derby, and in fact, Tom Amos is going to join us next. We'll talk about Derby Day at Fairgrounds in just a couple of minutes. So enjoy the week.
We'll be back on Sunday. I won't be. We'll
nice.
Be back on America's Eighth race on Sunday, and then you know, as we head towards Belmont, it's going to be amping up pretty much. You know, every racing day.
So. Nice. Well, and
Steve, thanks for having me on. And
thanks for having
Richie.
Me it was tremendous. Rich Migliore, everybody, and we're also watching carefully for Glenn Kozak to roll that tarp off the turf courses at Aqueduct. The sooner we get grass back, the happier we'll be. Most of the snow melted up here, I'll tell you that. Let's take a break. We're almost 15 into hour three. Morning is just rifled by. We got Cheltenham done and set the stage for the week, and we'll look ahead as well to Saturday. But we also have got some recap to do with Tom Amos. Sent little Stitious, very, very clever. Must have got a nice collection of steak conditions in his office, and he found that spot at Laurel on Saturday. And he and Joel Politti, they'll try to do something good as well on Saturday at Fairgrounds. Tom Amos is next at the races. Stay with us.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports presents